Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Amy Welburn. Amy is the author of numerous books, including Come Meet Jesus, An Invitation from Pope Benedict XVI. With Amy Welburn, we're going inside the pages of Light of the World, The Pope, the Church, and the Signs of the Times, a conversation with Pope Benedict XVI by journalist Peter Seawall, published by Ignatius Press. Welcome, Amy.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
It's fantastic to be able to talk to a person who is being published all over, including USA Today, concerning our Holy Father.
Well, it's been a privilege to be able to do what I can to correct misperceptions and try to get the word out about the truth about what he's saying and what he's all about.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who want to make him into a lot of different people, but he just refuses to be placed into a box.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, you try as they might, you know, people can't in reality, although the only way you can really understand him is to read him. Now, you just, you know, and I would encourage readers and listeners to not depend on press reports or even what I'm saying to get to know the Holy Father, because his writing, and as well this interview book, of course, but all of his writing is actually very accessible, and it's very, to me, spiritually nourishing, which is one of the reasons I encourage people to read him.
Well, we're talking, of course, about Light of the World, and it is an interview book. It's very unusual for a pope to have this type of format presented to the world.
Well, very unusual, I'd say unprecedented.
Yeah.
I don't think any other pope has ever done anything like this. Of course, it's not the first time Joseph Ratzinger has done this, even with this particular interviewer, Peter Seawald. This is their third interview book. Two of them were, of course, done before he was elected pope. And they're also quite fascinating, very interesting. And in fact, when people ask me, you know, what should I read to get to know Pope Benedict, those are two of the books that I suggested, those previous interview books, which I'll add this to the score, to the list, of course, too.
This one is different than even the last two just because of the nature of some of the controversy that's come out. When you read the book, I mean, it didn't jump out at me like it did apparently those who were looking for something to wave a flag and say, wow, there's controversy in the church. And then, of course, we're talking about the condom issue.
Right, yeah. And it's really, it's hard to understand the motives of people who are making a big deal of it or have made a big deal about it, because, as you said, when you read it in context, and you don't even have to understand every little, you know, minute point of Catholic theology or even of Pope Benedict's thought, but to just read it in context in the book, doesn't seem to be a very controversial statement. It's a very specific statement with a very particular, I think, perspective. And I don't know if you want to go into that or not right now, but as you said, you know, you could pick out anything from any book and make a big deal about it. But I think, you know, with this, it was truly kind of strange and unjustified.
Well, let's talk about the parts of the book that you found fascinating. What jumped out at you?
Well, I think the first chapter of the book is very affecting, and I think anybody reading it cannot be affected by it, because it deals with Peter Seawald asks Pope Benedict what he was thinking and feeling when he was elected pope, and did he expect this, and what were his thoughts, and so on. And it's very honest and very humble and very interesting, too. And it's a passage in which the Holy Father's humility shines forth. But not only that, there's an aspect of his character that has always appealed to me. You know, I can't profess to be a lifelong student of Pope Benedict. I only really became, you know, sort of immersed in his thought when he was elected pope, is that his total openness to God's will. And this is deeply consistent with his whole emphasis and direction of his theology and his, I would call, spiritual writing, is that the Christian lives because he or she has been embraced by Christ, taken up by Christ, put on Christ in baptism, exists to allow oneself to be filled by Christ and to love as Christ did, to be Christ's love and presence and wisdom to the extent that we can in interaction with our own gifts in the world. And when you read, you know, what he says to Peter Sewald about, you know, what he had sort of thought he might be doing after he retired from the Congregation for the Doctrine for the Faith, and how his plans got interrupted, I think it's very easy for all of us to relate to. None of us are going to be elected Pope.
Nope. None of,
but we've all been confronted with big changes in our life. We've been confronted with tasks that we don't want to do, that seem beyond us, that mm-hmm. seem like something that we could never do, which, you know, he makes clear in this book. He says, you know, his prayer essentially is, God, you've put me here, help me, mm-hmm. and let your will be done, but, you know, and help me do it. And I think that is something to me that's, you know, applicable to all of us. So I think, you know, that's one of the things that runs through the book, is his very actually simple spirituality. And I, you know, when I say simple, I don't, that's not an insult, you know, because that's mm-hmm. what Jesus calls us to, is simplicity, childlikeness. And it runs through the whole book, is, you know, a sense that who he is as a Christian, as a priest, is a person who is at God's disposal. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I need to remember every hour of every day as I'm, you know, pushed and pulled and, you know, called to do things that I don't particularly want to do and so on, you know, whether it is in family life or work life or whatever. So that really struck me, as it always does. The Holy Father's reflections on the sexual abuse crisis in the church are mm-hmm. very important. They're not, you know, PR spin, because Pope Benedict does not do PR spin. They're not centered on trying to excuse the church from anything, which I think is very important for all of us to remember, very important for leaders in the church to listen to, and that he doesn't blame anybody else. He doesn't blame the culture. He doesn't blame society. He doesn't blame any particular group of people. He says this was filth that was in the church. Mm-hmm. And he uses that word, filth, and that what we are going through is a purification, and what we need is purification and penance. This, again, is something that is not only applicable to that horrendous situation in the church, but also to our lives as well. That willingness to honestly face our failures and our sins and the way we have harmed others, and to take responsibility for that. One of the things that interested me was his tying in the year of priests, year four priests, mm-hmm. with this, because he says of that year, you know, it shouldn't have been, and it wasn't really intended to be a, you know, glorification, a, you know, a romantic glorification of the priesthood. It was a year for priests, which means it's an opportunity for priests and for all of us in support and prayerful support of priests to purify ourselves and to purify themselves and to, you know, cleave more closely to Christ. There's something on every page that's fascinating, but I think, you know, those are some points that really struck me.
Amy, the thing that you brought up so beautifully in the USA Today article, I think, is something that a lot of us, I know when I encounter Pope Benedict, it's a standout for me too, is that he always is lifting up the church as this beautiful beacon, as this where Christ is, and that's where the people dwell. But as you've just said, he's not afraid to say there is filth in the church. But he also is the primary leader of the penitent. I mean, he is mm-hmm. constantly asking for forgiveness from those who have suffered, but also from the world and from those who follow those mm-hmm. leaders who have failed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and yeah, he's very clear-eyed. I mean, he's a student of history. He's 83 years old. He worked in the, you know, Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which was the clearinghouse not only for sexual abuse issues, but for concerns that would come in throughout from around the world about other aspects problematic aspects in which, you know, those charged with teaching, church teaching, were not doing so and so forth. So he knows from very firsthand and from very deep within the well of the mystery of the church, which is the mystery of the church is that it's incarnational, which means that it's, you know, Christ dwelling within this human institution, and it is, you know, it is his body, but it is, you know, people, sinful people, who are a part of it, all of us. And he, you know, when I think of Pope Benedict and the way he speaks of the church and the way he speaks of those who minister in the church, I think a lot of St. Paul, which, again, I think, you know, ties back to his declaring a year of St. Paul, mm-hmm. Which is that when you read Paul, read the letters of the Paul, you see this sort of personified in a very dramatic human way in which, you know, St. Paul is the one who said, it is no longer I, but Christ who lives in me. Mm-hmm. But he's also the one who said, you know, I am the weakest of men, you know, I am a sinner, and so forth. And so you see that dual reality intertwine that mystery in Paul himself. And I think, you know, this is something that deeply informs the Holy Fathers, too. And it's just, it's a mystery. And we want it to be, we would like it to be different. You know, we would like it all to be perfect and cleaned up and always crystal clean and clear, but it's just not. But as you point out, what the Holy Father calls us to is to do our best. You know, he says, when he speaks of the sexual abuse crisis, he says, you know, there are a lot of things that we need to do. Penance, purification, sorrow for victims. I mean, he always puts victims first. But we also need to make sure that what we are doing every day is doing the work of Christ in the church and making sure that the church shines with the love of Christ and the wisdom and the beauty of Christ. That's fundamental.
It's almost as though you can't really clean the window unless you're willing to look at the dirt on it,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So you have to be willing to be able to see it so that you can shine it clean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think he does that. And I just have to say, as you were speaking about this, two women jumped out of my mind that have gotten kind of slammed in some corners for saying essentially what he's been saying, and that's Flannery O'Connor and Dorothy Day.
Right.
They both had very gruff ways of talking about the church in some capacities, but they always pointed to the centrality of Christ as its center.
Right.
And that's exactly what the Holy Father compels us to contemplate.
He does. And I think one of the other ways that this plays out in his writing and speaking and in this book, in this interview book with Peter C. Wald, is that when he speaks of the church and the centrality of Christ in the church, he is speaking to everybody. He's speaking to the world. He's saying, you know, here, world, you know, everything that you're seeking is here in Christ, in his church.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also speaking to the church. He's speaking to people who are Christians, who are Catholic, who are, you know, ordinary workaday Catholics, people who are employed by the church, people who volunteer for the church, people who are, you know, ordained and or vowed to serve Christ through the church. He's saying, keep your eyes on Christ. One of the most interesting one-liners in this book is very simple. He says, the bureaucracy is spent and tired.
Mm.
That should be put up in every chancery in the world as a reminder and a caution. In that, the context is that he's speaking of new movements, you know, Communion Liberation, Opus Dei, and so on and so forth. And he's sort of musing at where is the energy for evangelization and this, you know, the desperately needed evangelization to a broken world. Where's it coming from? And he says, the bureaucracy is spent and tired. Which is what happens to bureaucracies.
Mm-hmm.
They get spent and tired. And he's pointing out that too often those of us who minister into the church or who even, you know, just sort of are baptized Catholics going about our daily lives, we forget to put Christ first. We put ourselves first. We put our own ideologies first, our own agendas first, our own egos first. And then that's when we become spent and tired because we've pushed Christ out. We're no longer nourished by the Holy Spirit, we're nourished by our own egos, and that runs out. And so, you know, I think it's really interesting to me that, again, he's deeply aware of sort of the play of church history, how reform and change happens in the church, and it comes from unexpected places. He always makes the point, I mean, not so much in this book, but, you know, when he speaks about this, that, you know, this true, you know, evangelizing, even reforming spirit is always faithful to the church, always faithful to authority. But at the same time, you know, he calls those of us who are involved in church to be on a constant retreat, to be constantly presenting our activities and our mission to the Lord and saying, okay, is this your will? Am I putting you in here, or am I trying to present myself and my own agenda? And so, you know, the whole book, I think, is also a reflection on that dilemma as well.
Of course, we're talking with Amy Welburn about the new book on Pope Benedict XVI, The Light of the World, written by Peter Sewald. And Amy, everything you've just said, he's bringing forward even now in what he's doing with the Wednesday audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here he's taking these great women of the Middle Ages, these mystics,
yeah,
who have such deep, profound revelation. I almost fell over when he actually acknowledged the revelations of St. Bridget of Sweden,
right,
which have been kind of, people have danced around for years,
mm-hmm,
and yet he went right there, but then he did exactly what you said. He brought it back around how they, through the authority of the church,
mm-hmm,
their obedience, you know, we're able to enter into that authenticated by the church relationship with Christ, their mystical revelations, which have fed so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think these, all of his general audiences have been fascinating, but I think this is just a real sort of uptick here because,
mm-hmm,
as you said, he's been focusing on these medieval women, some of whom I had never heard of.
Me too. I know them now.
Yeah. Another theme that comes through in this interview book very clearly is the Holy Father's sense of what it means to be human, what,
mm-hmm,
it means to be a Christian, which are the same thing, really. You know, to be your ultimate human means to belong to Christ. That's what we're destined for.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is sort of a image in his work, and it, as I said, it comes through in the book, constant image and contrast between being closed, being open, in that when we just focus on ourselves, we become closed. Our life becomes narrow and cramped and crabbed and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But connected with Christ through baptism, nourishing that relationship through the church, everything is wide open. And he even uses that phrase, well, I mean, it's translated. So when he's speaking of liturgy and he talks about what should happen at liturgy and sort of contrasting a contemporary desire sometimes for liturgy to be about us,
mm-hmm,
rather than about God, he says, you know, what should happen during liturgy is that, you know, we encounter God. This is the most important work of the church, he says, because this is what it's all about, is bringing God and human beings together. And then we can go into, as he puts it, the wide open spaces. You know,
mm-hmm,
not Montana, but...
Mm-hmm.
And he uses that phrase, the wide open spaces. And what he means is that when we are connected to God, when we are nourished by God, you know, this is God we're talking about, God of infinite love, truth, beauty, compassion, wisdom, we're a part of that then. We're a part of, it's limited by our humanity, it's limited by our mortal flesh, and we're, what we are capable of and our, you know, our distance from,
mm-hmm,
God. But at the same time, when we are nourished by God and focused on God and have Christ dwelling in us and are living in response to that, anything is possible.
Mm.
Anything is possible. And this is why, for example, you know, when the Holy Father speaks of liturgy in the book, he speaks of it several times in different contexts in response to different questions about, you know, why is he giving people, you know, asking people to kneel and receive communion on the tongue at when they receive communion from him at papal liturgies. Well, the reason is so they can more clearly see that this is Christ, that this is special, which he sees as a real problem at these massive liturgies in particular, which mm-hmm. become sort of more mob scenes and spectacles and run the risk of doing that. And so people can see, this is Christ. He is here with me. Therefore, I can, you know, I am, you know, part of the this infinite love that Christ has. He speaks of it, he uses the term when he's just speaking of why he, you know, why traditional set forms of liturgy consistent with the history of the church are so important, because they force us, in a way, to put ourselves aside. You know, because we can't be receptive if we're full of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it encourages, it not only plugs us into, you know, 2,000 years of tradition and prayer with the communion of saints in a very sort of concrete way, it also opens us up because we are freed from the need to present ourselves, to put on a show, and we are just there, we are there to participate in a most intimate way and connect with the Lord in a way that does, as he say, in this concrete space, connect us to the wide open spaces of God's love. I love that contrast that you see in Pope Benedict's thought and here in this book all the time between sort of the narrowness of the self-centered life and the self-sustaining life and the expansiveness of life with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who listen to the Holy Father and read him, and those who are privileged to know him, which I'm not one, you know, speak of his optimism and his childlike faith, in a way, his simple faith, his humility, his tirelessness. The key to understanding that is sort of listening to what he says about contrasting life without God, unconnected with God, from life connected with God. And again, it's something, you know, we're not Pope, we're not high-level church muckety-mucks, but we're people who deal with that question every day because, you know, all of us feel maybe trapped, we feel badly about our lives, wonder what is the purpose of me, you know, doing a repetitive job or, you know, sort of dealing with the same kinds of things all the time. And mm-hmm. the Holy Father gives us a key, a spiritual key, to be able to see all of this in a different light, to be able to see that where I am in the papal apartments or in my house in Nebraska, that I am, God is here with me, and that if I connect with God through his church, through the word, through his church, through his liturgy, infinity is open to me.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. It's stunning how this person who everyone considers the great thinker mm-hmm. is also the great heart man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in 83 years of living this spirituality, he shows that it can happen, not just for someone in their elder years, of course. I mean, because obviously it happened with someone like a Therese.
Right.
But it's amazing the importance of the relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. even in Verbum Domini, when it just came out, it's all about relationship. And mm-hmm. even in when we celebrate liturgy, it's because you are paying homage, respect to the person you're encountering, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. And as he says in the book, it's very, very easy for it to fall apart, which is the reason it's so important for the church to be the church.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is hard for some people to understand because one of the things, other things that's very interesting to me about the Holy Father is his sort of empathy and understanding with the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
He always maintains that the church needs to be the best. It needs to be Christ. It needs to, you know, we need to, our liturgies need to reflect richness of the church. They need to be catechetical moments. They need to reflect the tradition of the church, the beauty of the church, the best that we have to God. Our service needs to be a light lit with the love of Christ as we serve, you know, those in need in love, not just as clients, but as loving brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to use the word tolerant, but I'm just going to say sort of accepting of the various degrees that people are at. In one of the previous interview books, he talks about the Easter and Christmas Catholics, you know, sort of the bane of the professional Catholic's existence. You know, we like to sneer at them, the people who only come to church at Christmas and Easter. Well, he doesn't sneer at them. He says, well, at least they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope that when they come, they experience Christ. And in this book, too, he touches on it in relationship to ethical issues, and I think this is sort of where the condom business comes in. He speaks about it in relationship to the church's teaching on contraception, not excusing anything, but saying, you know, the teaching of Humanae Vitae is true. There are always going to be people who are deeply nourished by it and really live by it.
Mm-hmm.
But there, not everybody is going to. And this is just reality. There are different ways to speak about these different levels, if you want to say, of adherence to the church's moral teachings. There are different ways to talk about it. When the Pope talks about it, he tends to speak of it in terms of we are all pilgrims on a journey, and some of us are further along than others, and we just need to encourage each other. We need to support each other. Those of us who are sort of, you know, really closely adhering to certain teachings need to be joyful witnesses of that and pull everybody else along by our joyful witness. But we need to put up with each other, which is sort of, I think he uses that phrase in the book, in the interview book. We need to learn to put up with each other because, you know, this is my addition, because God is the only judge. But at the same time, he never suggests that the teaching should be changed. He never teaches that the church suggests that the church should be anything else but the stronghold of truth. That's the church's responsibility, to be who Christ called it to be and to be a steady witness to what's been revealed. But when it comes to the rest of us, whether it's a church's teaching on sexuality, whether it's the church's teaching or the gospel teaching on poverty and wealth, we call each other to greater holiness and love, but we understand that we're not God. You know, it's not my job to look at you and say, you know, with my checklist of church teachings and declare that, you know, what kind of Christian you are because of it. And so this is very confusing to people on all sides, because, you know, they think that somehow weakens the church, that weakens the message. But I think, as any confessor can tell you, it's just reality, and you're just trying to guide people along, encourage people along to greater fidelity and greater holiness.
Yeah, he's the great elevator, I think.
Yeah.
He wants to meet us where whatever floor we're on, but he continually is lifting us up.
Mm-hmm.
He's always pointing you up to what you could be, or what we could be as church. And the only way you can get there is Deus Caritas Est.
Yeah.
I mean, it's God is love, and that's, you know, right off the bat. And he exudes that in everything he does. And I think he just stymies the critics on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that constant reaching out. The light of the world, but just another wonderful surprise. For a bureaucracy that's gotten old, I don't know. He's sure freshening it up.
I know, he is. And, you know, he speaks about this. And, you know, I pray for the Holy Father every day, as all of us do, because he really is a gift to the church. But he speaks of his fatigue and, you know, how he can't do quite as much as he used to 5 years ago and so on. But, you know, he depends on God to fill in the gaps. And I think the other thing that he speaks of in relationship to this, that again is a good lesson for all of us, is he constantly speaks of how he doesn't do any of this alone.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks of his collaborators, of people in the papal household, of those in the curia, and that, you know, this is not something that he bears all by himself. And, you know, when you go back and read the first homily he preached as Pope, he makes this very clear. He asks, you know, he asks for our prayers, and he asks for, you know, our prayerful support of him, because he cannot do it without us. It's another indication, expression of his humility and his realism about the role of the Pope and what he can do. I think he's got a very clear and, I think, interesting vision in terms of governance of what the papacy is all about. But in terms of his own efforts, you really see the humility come through.
Mm. Yep. So I'd say you'd encourage people to go out and pick up a copy of Light of the World.
Absolutely. Not just because it's interesting and not just because it's the news of the day, but because I think it's good spiritual reading. It's educational, yes, but it's also good spiritual reading. As I've tried to make, I've tried to say during the interview, he doesn't see himself as anything but a pilgrim on a journey, a disciple. And when he speaks of his spiritual life and when he speaks of how he makes decisions and how he governs in response to the Holy Spirit, the various disappointments, the various frustrations, I think anybody can find their own life echoed in what he says and sort of take his approach, his prayerful, humble approach to doing God's will as a model for our lives as well.
Hmm. Amy Welburn, thank you so much for your time, and keep writing, will you please?
I'm trying.
Okay, good. God bless.
Thank you, Chris.
We've been going with Amy Welburn inside the pages of Light of the World, The Pope, the Church, and the Sign of the Times. To pick up a copy of this book, go to IgnatiusIgnatius.com, the website for Ignatius Press, or find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. For more information on books and writings by Amy Welburn, go to her blog site, Charlotte Was Both. To hear and download this discussion, along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.